Hello guys, welcome to the next episode of the Challenger Tour podcast. I'm still speaking to you from Portugal, although not for long, because maybe in about, let's say 13 hours from here, I will be leaving this country, coming back to Poland. Of course, since I was at the ATP 250 in Estoril this week, my Challenger watching, especially when it comes to the European ones, was a little lower in volume than usually. But I think I still can bring you a good enough perspective. If you like, especially when there were some rain delays or early in the morning, I was able to get a lot of watching done. And then, of course, Mexico City and Florianopolis were kind of later in the day. I watched all the finals, so I think we're gonna be fine. And yeah, I think without further ado, we're just going to jump right into it. And yeah, in Mexico City, we've had Thiago Agustin Tirante claim his fourth Challenger title. He beat Alexis Gallardo in the final, 6-1, 6-3. So when it comes to Tirante, of course, this is my winner pick for this week. I mean, for this week, I got 1 point. This was on Tirante. As I said, I was going to keep picking him in the altitude swing because I just figured, okay, he's probably going to get at least one title. He kind of needed to as well because he really wants to make Roland Garros main draw, of course, you know, without having to play qualifying. And yeah, just defending these points was very important. In Mexico City last year, he made the final, losing to Dominic Kepfer. So this time he manages to do one better. When it comes to Tirante on altitude, obviously he's one of the GOATs. So far, four Challenger titles, all of them at least 14,000 meters, I think. So yeah, absolutely. Oh, of course, sorry, 1,400, of course. And yeah, I mean, this week he didn't even lose a set. He only had one tiebreak on the way to the title, which was against Bernard Tomic in the semifinals. Otherwise, very simple, and honestly, even the final, I mean, it was a 6-1, 6-3 win over Gallardo. And if anything, I would even say that Tirante was a little more forgiving than usual. Usually, you would expect him to maybe pounce on Gallardo even more than he did in the final because of how Alexis was playing. But, you know, I'll get to that in a second. But anyway, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just Thiago Agustin Tirante at altitude. He's an absolute GOAT. The serve gets so much stronger. The forehand is insane. He's also scrambling a lot better than other players. And yeah, he manages to get yet another title in such conditions. And when it comes to Alexis Gallardo, this was a very nice final run for him, I think, because he was injured at the beginning of the season. He only played 2 matches in February, none in January. And then he comes back for the altitude swing, and he's doing very well. I mean, in San Luis Potosi, he wins 2 matches, loses to Mpechi Pericard in the quarters, great match. And then in Mexico City, he beats Walton, Mejia, the champion from San Luis Potosi, of course, Zhukaev, Jouvier. Loses to Tirante. Honestly, the final just wasn't it. I mean, all the service games that he had that he just threw away with double faults, with spraying all over the place, you just can't afford to do it against Tirante at altitude especially. And yeah, it wasn't a great final showing, but definitely a very solid week for Alexis and a very needed run, given that, yeah, he was out for a couple of months. And yeah, with that, I think we can talk about the semi-finalists, really. Not much else to add. Maxime Jouvier, Bernard Tomic, actually with both of them, quite a bit of a storyline, I think. Jouvier, until recently, he was 0-9 for the season. Then he starts playing ITF events, makes the quarters in one of them, loses to Gauthier, then the final in another one of them, loses to Shidek, but, you know, finally gets some wins. And now also a challenger semi for him, beats Kwiatkowski, beats Mpechi Pericard, beats Mayo, loses to Gallardo. And I think we've said it many times, but like, Jouvier at his very best, insane potential, we rarely see that very best. And he does play like a little bit of a, well, let's say an overly optimistic style in terms of, you know, the risk that he's taking. But, well, what can you do? I mean, that's the path that he took for himself. And he's trying to make it work overall in the course of his career. This was certainly a very nice run. And as I said, I mean, the guy started the year 0-9. So everything is now an improvement. But this particularly, I mean, quarters, final at the ITF level, and now a semi in Mexico City. And when it comes to Bernard Tomic, this was a very interesting tournament for him too. After the quarterfinals in San Luis Potosi, semifinals here, Tomic actually has a real shot at making Roland Garros qualies now. Just needs to keep performing like this the next few weeks. We'll see if he, the next few weeks. We'll see if he manages to do it. So far, San Luis Potosi, he made the quarters, as I said, and then Mexico City, he beats Jasika, Oliveira, Mansouri, and loses to Tirante, but he had his chances in the second set. And as I said earlier, he was the only one to actually take Tirante to a tiebreak in the during the whole week. So, you know, there is some positives to also take from that. But yeah, overall, Tomic actually will have a shot now at making Roland Garros qualifying. And obviously, this is also one of his best runs on clay in ages. Best run on clay in ages, actually, I can say. Of course, the conditions kind of play into it. But still, like, last 2 years, he was also playing Mexico City and not winning matches. So it's not like it's only the conditions. But yeah, I mean, at this stage of his career, if Tomic is going to play on well on clay, it's going to be a very fast clay court. It's going to have to be a very fast clay court. And we also need to talk about the doubles in Mexico City, of course, where once again, it's the legendary already pairing of Segerman-Trhatch. Their record together is now at 55-7. They've won 13 titles in that stretch, including 5 challengers right now, 3 already this year. They had a bit of a weaker run, actually. They lost Cleveland and the 2 Tenerife challengers they lost in the opening rounds. Then also they played Indian Wells. They beat Gonzalez Multeni, pretty big upset. Lost to Kolhoff-Mektić. But then eventually they come back to the Challenger Tour in the Altitude Swing. They make the semis in San Luis Potosi, take their revenge on Bolipali and Kalianda Punacha in the quarters here, and beat great pairings like Johnson Mansouri or Schoolkate Walton on the way to this title. So, looks like they are back to their very dominant form. By the way, when they lost to Kolhoff-Mektić in the second round in Indian Wells, Kolhoff-Mektić won the title. And besides Mexico City, we had just 3 Challenger 75s this week. So we have, basically a full-on freedom in terms of where we want to go first. Besides Tirante, as I said, my picks weren't great. I'm going to maybe start with Florianopolis, just finish off South America, or rather Central and South America, and then travel back to Europe. So with Florianopolis, we had Enzo Cuoco picking up his 3rd Challenger title, beating João Lucas Reis da Silva. And this was, by the way, one of the best matches of the week, I have to say. Enzo Cuoco Enzo Cuoco basically made his 3rd Challenger final of the season already, which is very impressive, needless to say. And also kind of going under the radar, I have to say, because at the beginning of the season, we had Numea, and that I kind of forgot about this final. I think I mentioned this last time that I forgot about it because he lost to Kazuo 6-1, 6-1. Everyone remembered that Kazuo picked up the title and then, of course, went on to do great stuff at the Australian Open as well. And Cuoco, he lost in the first round of qualies in Australia, didn't do much in the India swing, lost in the first round Asuncion. So I definitely kind of forgot, well, not that he exists, but that he had a pretty good start to the year. But then the last 2 weeks, Sao Leopoldo, runner-up finish, Florianopolis title. And when it comes to this week, on the way to the title, he didn't drop a set, particularly impressive in the wins against Roman Andres Buruchaga and Gianluca Magher, for sure. And then he beats João Lucas Reis da Silva in a high-quality final, one of the best matches of the week for sure. When it comes to that final, I think it took Cuoco until maybe the second set to start serving better. And it has to be said that throughout the week, he was serving extremely well. Up until the final, he was winning over 80% of his first serve points in every single match on clay, on sea-level clay. But, we've talked about it many times that, Cuoco has a very underrated first serve. In fact, actually, in the final, he also won over 80%. So in all his matches this week, he won over 80% of his first serve points, which is, on clay, very, very rare. And that was a key factor, I think, going sort of into the third set, into the late second set, just having that sort of ability to end so many points on his own terms against someone who was peaking in the final, because Reis da Silva, we're going to get to him soon, was definitely peaking there. He found a few really good backhand counters to steal the second set, then he also falls 1-3 down in the decider. And once he got back into the match, the third set tiebreak just played it a lot better than the Brazilian. So definitely someone who was kind of like due a title, I would say, with all his runs recently. So I'm glad he managed to get that in. Coming back to the top 200 now and with potential to break his career high sometime soon. I mean, definitely. The last couple of weeks, he's done tremendous work beating Ugo Carabelli, Varias, Mager, Buruchaga. So a lot of stellar wins, and perhaps this one today against Reis da Silva was actually one of the most impressive, given that it was a final, despite maybe the opponent not having as established of a name as the previous people. And also, it's his first title since 2021. He's been picking up challenger titles in three-year intervals. 2018 Cassis, 2021 Gran Canaria, and 2024 Florianopolis. Gran Canaria, that would have been one of the very first events that I covered on this podcast, actually. Well, maybe not one of the very first, but it was like in the first two months of this show. Maybe like the second month of this show, maybe the first month. So yeah, quite brings back quite a lot of memories to me. And when it comes to João Lucas Reis da Silva, some of you know that I've been mentioning him as this sort of guy who, like, if he ever puts it together, you know, if he ever gets his game to be the best that it can be, he has enormous potential. However, I think what is wrong with sort of his prospects is also very much represented by his season so far. I mean, the guy wins three matches at the start of the year, makes the semis in Buenos Aires, then loses nine in a row, and then makes the final here and easily can win it. I mean, his peak game is kind of absurd, you know. He's so athletic, he's so strong, so sort of like, you know, a lot of muscle mass, fantastic ball striker on the forehand side, especially the way he explodes into that shot. Definitely a lot to learn in terms of like experience, being a match player. The backhand, I think, has serious technical flaws too. However, I mean, yeah, when it works, like on his day, he is a fantastic ball striker. Glad that he was able to show it again this week. Win over Ugo Carabelli, of course, is the one sort of catching everyone's attention. Camilo did struggle with his lower back in that one, but still, he also beat Prado Angelo, Sakamoto, Dutra da Silva. That was the toughest win. And yeah, could have won it. I mean, this was his third final. He makes one every year. 2022 Ambato, lost to Bagnis. 2023 Coquimbo, lost to Puccinelli da Almeida. If someone listened to my episode about the best matches of 2023, Puccinelli da Almeida Reis da Silva was one of my favorites. And when it comes to the final today against Quaco, I mean, yeah, easily could have won it. He doesn't. It's a little brutal for him that he played such a poor tiebreaker at the very end. But all in all, I think obviously this was still a very impressive performance, you know, the whole week for him. It's wild that the guy recently lost nine matches in a row. Some of them, I mean, to Juan Manuel Cerúndolo, for example, 6-1, 6-love. But yeah, that's who Reis da Silva is for now. I honestly don't know. I can't tell you that I believe that he will ever put it together. I think it might stay a bit of a, like a, you know, what if. But we'll see. I mean, there are a fair few challenger players from Brazil like this, right? I mean, I don't know, Meligeni Alves, Reis da Silva, Ribeiro, who have an absurd peak level, but they can't really, you know, like, you know, touch it every single week, every single month even. But anyway, yeah, still a solid run for him. Three challenger finals now, three that he lost. Didn't have the easiest job, I would say, in them, because Bagnis, Puccinelli, De Almeida, Quaco. But still, Puccinelli, De Almeida, Quaco, I mean, that's not, you know, that's not Bagnis, right? That's not Bagnis, Varias, Ugo Carabelli and stuff in finals. So I guess he had his chances. And then when it comes to the semi-finalists, we have Gianluca Mager, who made the semi, obviously made the semis. He beat Bueno, then Puccinelli da Almeida via retirement, and then Zuckerman. So, I mean, nothing special, but I think since the beginning of the season, we've been mentioning that, like, he is having a very solid run this year. Lots of challenger quarterfinals already. Most of the time he gets through his first round. In fact, I think only once so far he lost in the opening round. Buenos Aires to Kicker. So, yeah, definitely a return to form after a very poor 2023, maybe even 2022. If you want to go back that far, and 20-8 for the season, Gianluca Mager, which I think says everything about his quality this season so far. Didn't threaten Enzo Quaco in the semis here, though. And Camilo Ugo Carabelli, as I said, he was struggling with his back a little bit. He is like on the verge of returning to the top 100. Rightfully so. I mean, he was only there for like a week or two back in 2022, I think. But with the level that he's been showing so far this year, it's obvious he's going to be there sooner rather than later, this time for at least slightly longer. And yeah, to me, it's pretty clear that currently he absolutely deserves to be in there. This week, he actually started from the qualifying, which was pretty interesting. But of course, that was only because he was a late signup. He actually would have been, I think, the first or second seed in the draw if he signed up on time. But then he beats, once he qualifies, he beats Zanellato, Blancano, Luz, and loses to Reis da Silva in that aforementioned semifinal, where I think he was struggling a little bit. Would have been the favorite, let's say, in the final. I don't know how big a favorite over Kwakwo, but he would have been the favorite. And when it comes to my pick in Florianopolis, I actually was kind of unlucky here because I went with Meligeni Alves and he withdrew just before the event started. So I wasn't able to pinpoint that one great event a season that Meligeni Alves has. Would it have been this one? Who the hell knows? And when it comes to the doubles, we've had a pretty surprising, I would say, lineup of Zuckerman and Sanchez-Hover picking up the title. Of course, Zuckerman is around the top 200 in doubles, but Sanchez-Hover not really achieving anything previously at the challenger level in that specialization, in that discipline. I mean, he had a couple of futures titles back in the day, actually five of them. But yeah, a career high about 400. And this week, well, they didn't need to beat anyone maybe, you know, extremely good. But still, Duncan Stevenson, Rodriguez Roncadelli in the final. Yeah, I mean, sure. It was definitely quite a surprising round from the Israeli-Spanish duo. And with that, I think we can get to Barletta, where we had Damir Dzumhur picking up the title over Alor Mayo. So Dzumhur, this is his ninth challenger title, and I have to say that somewhat similarly actually to Mayo, which we'll get to in a second, Damir Dzumhur this year, like, at the beginning of the season, he made a couple of challenger semis, and then we kind of forgot about him. But why did we do that? Because he played five qualifying events in a row and didn't make it at either of them. In fact, he wasn't even winning matches. Doha, he made the second round, but after that, four straight round one losses in qualifying, Dubai, Indian Wells, Phoenix, Miami. I think to an extent, he was definitely kind of exposed for the fact that his current quality might not make it on the main tour, but it seems that he's still in that very good form since the beginning of the season, and like at the challenger level, he will absolutely be a threat. Who did he beat this week? Kopil, Piccione, Maestrelli, Skatov, that was the tough one, briefly a set and a breakdown. Then Arol Mayo in the final, which was so easy for him, actually. I mean, Mayo went 3-love up in the second set and then lost six games in a row, so all in all, it was a 6-1-6-3 win. When Mayo wasn't attacking, Dzumhur was just, you know, unleashing the drop shot magic. And then when Mayo was attacking, Dzumhur was, like, fast enough and varying his defense well enough so that Arol would make a lot of errors. So it was kind of like the best of both worlds, and there was not much that Mayo was able to do in the final. But yeah, all in all, it just really seems like Damir Dzumhur didn't actually lose his January-February form, even if we kind of forgot he had it in the first place. And then when it comes to Arol Mayo, the finalist, this is already his third challenger final, so he's kind of coming like João Lucas Reis da Silva in that he makes one every year. 2022, he lost to Zsombor Piros in Tampere. Then 2023, he lost to Hamad Medjedovic in Mallorca. And now in Barletta to Damir Dzumhur. Of course, he still has chances to make you know, more challenger finals in the near future. Of course, he might still get one until the end of the year. And in fact, I would say it's pretty likely. But yeah, Mayo is a pretty similar case to Dzumhur, actually, that at the beginning of the season, he made two challenger semis, and then we kind of forgot about him because he went the ATP route, wasn't doing anything special, or like rather went, let's say, mixed ATP / challenger route, wasn't doing anything special. So we kind of forgot he was in that decent form. And this was also a final between the top two seeds, by the way, Mayo, Dzumhur, wild. But yes, they managed to get in. I obviously didn't pick either of them, but yeah, they actually managed to show that they were better than the entire field. And Mayo beat Kivatsev, Vincent Ruggeri, Kashnikovsky, and Berrettini. Berrettini, of course, Jacopo Berrettini, not Matteo Berrettini, but we'll get to that. Well, in fact, we'll get to that now. Jacopo Berrettini was such a surprise this week. I mean, I saw some comments on Twitter about someone saying that, you know, if he was healthy, he was always going to be like much better. I don't know. I mean, my experiences watching Jacopo Berrettini weren't that great. Obviously, he kind of carries himself like Matteo in like how he moves and sort of the physical posture, but I mean that the same talent, you can't really see it. But this week Jacopo Berrettini was like a, let's say, you know, a low spec version of his brother, in that he didn't have the crazy power on the serve and forehand. He didn't have maybe the excellent slice and like the great knowledge of how to use his simple patterns to the greatest possible extent. However, he actually was playing some very good ball. He beat Tseng, he beat Bonzi, he beat Giannu, and he lost to Errol Mayo. Three huge upsets in a row. He managed to make his first Challengers semifinal since 2021, I think, when he made two of them. So it's a massive run for the younger Berrettini brother. And it was actually a very good week for the Berrettini household as a whole, because as we know, Matteo picked up the title at the ATP 250 in Marrakesh. So up until a certain moment, you could kind of start thinking, oh, so maybe both Berrettinis are going to pick up titles. But of course, that eventually didn't happen. And it was only Jacopo who, it was only Matteo who managed to take his run all the way until the end. But for Jacopo, absolutely, it's a great run, it's a great return to form, and it's going to be exciting to see if he follows that up in any way. For example, like earlier this year, you know, the two challenger appearances lost in round one of qualifying. ITF's one semi, where he lost to Matej Dodik, which of course is no shame. But otherwise, I mean, some pretty rough losses, you know, three games against Celik Bilek, three games against Julio Cesar Porras. Yeah, I mean, let's see if he can follow it up, because I feel like at this stage we can't really know. Before this week, he was ranked 878. But to be fair, he had a few seasons, like a couple already, where he was barely playing due to injuries. And then we also have Timofey Skatov, who makes a Challenger semifinal. Recently, he retired in that Naples qualifying match to Artur Gea, but it seems like he's back in good form, good shape. He beats Guerrieri, Misolic, Bonadio, and loses to Jumhur. And as I said, Timofey Skatov had a set and a break lead, although very briefly, on Damir Jumhur. So certainly could have kept going. And as a whole, like the first 3 weeks of the Challenger clay season, let's say, very nice for Skatov, because he makes two semifinals, and this is a guy who needs some rhythm, who needs some good form, and just, yeah, playing himself into confidence. So for now, what he's doing for now, that's actually precisely it. And now also when it comes to the doubles in Barletta, we had Zdeněk Kolář once again. I mean, the guy is just unbelievable. Regardless of who he plays with, he's gonna be picking up challenger titles until his career is over, basically. The way that he's been dominating the Challenger Tour in the last few years is just so impressive to me, because if you look at him, you don't really see an insane doubles player, probably, for the most part. But actually, he kinda is. You know, six Challenger finals now. I'm trying to count them now. 13, I'm already at 17, I'm already at 20, and yes, this is the 21st doubles title at the challenger level for Zdeněk Kolář. This time he picked it up with Chun Sin Tseng, who of course is not really a phenomenal doubles player or anything. I mean, Chun Sin Tseng, in fact, that was his first doubles appearance of the season, but as I said, I mean, he just can do it all. And they beat some very good pairs, by the way. Margaroli Rodriguez Taverna, that's been a solid challenger duo for sure. There's also the Sabanovs, I mean, main tour winners a couple years back, and Aribaje Bonzi in the final. So yeah, an awesome run for Kolář Tseng. Once again, the legend of the Challenger Tour and the legend of this podcast as well. Zdeněk Kolář picks up yet another Challenger doubles title. And now when it comes to Barcelona, so the last challenger we had this week, that was a Challenger 75 as well. And we've had Nick Hart picking up the title, his first challenger title, obviously, over Bernabe Zapata Miralles. There's also, let's start with Nick Hart simply. This is the first Dominican Republic champion, of course, since Victor Estrella Burgos. 2017, Santo Domingo was the last one that Estrella Burgos, the legend for breaking the top 100, you know, way over 30 years old, and winning Quito three times in a row. His last challenger title came in 2017 in Santo Domingo. Nick Hart manages to get it done. He had one final before, 2022 in Alicante, lost to Lucas Klein, But I was not expecting it this week, and for many, many reasons, actually. So he's had a pretty solid season on the ITF circuit, I would say. Some weird losses, like, for example, Troy Hildebrand or Trey. What's his name? Trey, right? Trey, not Trey, not Troy. Yeah, Trey Hildebrand. There was also that one to Mashtakov, Mikita Mashtakov from Ukraine. But he also picked up a title. He picked up another two finals, lost to Oni Kwiatkowski, Merida Aguilar, beat Tabor, beat Erhard, beat Merida Aguilar, beat Habib. You know, it was there were quite a few good results. Of course, recently also the semis in Merida, but that's at altitude. Tristan Boyer beat him easily. So, like, my expectations of Hart here were very low. Because he was playing Quentin Alice in the first round as well. And, you know, Alice, top seed, of course, not in great form, but still. And Art not only beats, and Nick Hart not only beat him. By the way, I just said Art instead of Hart because Alice, right? That's funny how it works sometimes. But yeah, Nick Hart basically beat Quentin Alice. And then Valentin Royer as well. I thought that was a very good win, as Royer seemed destined for a big run here, given, you know, the way that the draw was shaping up. Then you had Nicolas David Yonel in the quarters, Javier Barranco Cossano in the semis. Okay, maybe the draw sort of cooled off after Alice and Royer. But then in the final, he beats Efin Bernabe Zapata Miralles, the second seed. So he beats both the second and the first seed. Pretty insane. And especially with a game that's sort of, you know, he's a very nice grinder, sure. But, you know, he doesn't seem like he does much special, right? I have to say, though, against Bernabe, the first set was such a breakfest, but, like, when it was 5-4 and he had to save breakpoints, Nick Hart, he was actually very, very brave on them. That was the first moment in the match when he wasn't getting dominated by the Bernabe Zapata Miralles hooked forehand. He was just really stepping into the court, crushing the forehand first time he got, serving volley on the third breakpoint save as well. And kudos to him for that, because that sort of bravery on the big points kind of won him the match, because obviously, like, Zapata Miralles has a better shot quality, especially on the forehand. But Nick Hart managed to beat him anyway and claim that challenger title. So absolutely a fantastic effort, considering he beat both Alice and Zapata Miralles, so the first two seeds. And when it comes to Hart, he can also make Grand Slam qualifying on based on that. Like, you know, he actually has a real shot at the French Open now. So we're going to have to wait and see, of course, if that materializes for him. But it is possible. It is out there. Then when it comes to Bernabe Zapata Miralles, the runner-up, I would have been very angry, kind of, if he won the title, because I picked him for Girona and he had this tame loss to Hassan. And I was like, okay, so he's probably not winning Barcelona as well. He was also 0-4 at this event in the past, which was kind of surprising. But this time he beat Neumayer, Billy Harris, and also had two retirements against Cecchinato and Giustino. But, you know, he can get a pass for that because he's Bernabe Zapata Miralles, right? We sort of expect him to, let's say, separate himself at the challenger level at some point once he gets more rhythm. We'll see if he actually does that. Of course, back in the day, breaking the top 100 took him quite a few years when it was clear he has the quality, but he, like, wasn't making that, you know, taking that step. And here in Barcelona, I mean, he will be disappointed with this loss to Hart. I think especially after he took the third set, he breaks with this awesome forehand pass, fully on the run, like a banana curved shot. And then he doesn't really capitalize on that in the third set. I think he's going to be disappointed with this effort a little bit. But all in all, it's still huge for him. I mean, 3-10 for the year before this, down to number 143 in the rankings. Obviously, Zapata Miralles was a player desperately in need of a run. And he managed to get it this week, even though he didn't, like, complete it. You know, he didn't take the title along with it. Then we also have to talk about the semifinalists, of course, where we had Javier Barranco Cossano. He's already won a round in Madrid qualifying too. But for now, in Barcelona, of course, to the semis, he beat Erhard, Gakov, Taberner, and lost to Hart, considering that recently he also had a quarterfinal run in Girona. So that's two very good weeks for him back to back. Pretty nice. I mean, that's already all I can say. Obviously, Barranco Cossano has always been, like, one of these players who can't fully break through to the challenger level, but is always there, kind of at the top of the ITF landscape and waiting for some sort of a massive breakthrough. We'll see if he ever gets it. But this year already, a semi at in Tenerife, a quarterfinal in Girona, a semi in Barcelona. So who knows? Maybe this will actually be his best ever season. it's quite possible. It seems for now. I mean, for now, I think he's on track to do this, to get his best ever season. And then Lorenzo Giustino, a little surprising in the semifinals, I would say, as at the beginning of the season, he played like 7 challengers, never got out of the second round. Then he actually went back to the challenger, to the ITF circuit for a while. First of all, like, you know, the first two events, he was pretty rough, but then he actually won a title, beating Marti Pujolras, beating Clark Privara. So definitely a solid run. Then he lost to Busse in the semis the next week. So right after that, he gets that rhythm. He goes to the challenger level. You know, we've seen it before, right? You grab some rhythm, you grab some wins at the lower category, you go up, and you instantly actually are fine. You once again play at a very solid level, and that's what Giustino did here. I think especially the win over Jesper de Jong has to be mentioned as something that was quite surprising to me at the time. In fact, let me see if I'm right, but I think I picked Jesper to win the title from what I remember. I believe so. You know, maybe it was someone else, but I think I picked Jesper de Jong to win the title, who lost to Giustino in the quarters. That was a win that surprised me for sure. I don't know if it's going to be my upset of the week. Probably there was something bigger, but still. And when he played Zapata Mirage in the semis, it's a shame he wasn't able to continue because the first set was actually very competitive. One more thing we need to do is the challenger match and upset of the week section. So when it comes to match of the week, I actually just posted the poll because I kind of recorded this in two parts. So I'm recording the Mexico City challenger and challenger match and upset of the week section at a different time, basically. You might hear some sort of change in terms of, you know, the quality of the sound. What I'm trying to say is that I only just put out the poll, so it's very hard to say which match will win yet. There were a lot of possible options too. This week didn't really have like a defining match, I think. However, I will vote also on the one that you guys so far, after just like 10-15 minutes, are highlighting, and it's going to be the Florianopolis final. As I've said many times, if there's a thriller in the final, it's likely going to be one of the main contenders for match of the week, just because, yeah, it's a special moment. Anytime we get a very good match out of the final on Sunday, and Quaco Reis da Silva was just that. As I've said many times, I really enjoy the ball bashing of Reis da Silva, especially when he's on. And that day he definitely was. Some of that peak athletic forehand hitting was there, and Quaco had to work really hard to withstand it. So I thought that was a very good dynamic as well. And obviously just the fact that the final went to three sets and it was so deep. I was actually watching the rest of it, the last part of it, pretty much I was watching in the stadium already. So it was kind of funny for me on double duty as well. But, you know, I had to see it until the end, right? Quaco Reis da Silva. So I was watching both Hurkacz Martinez and Quaco Reis da Silva, of course, the latter on my phone, and the first with my own very eyes on the court. And the last thing we need to do, upset of the week, let's look into it. So in Mexico City, for example, we had Janvier beating Petri Pericard. That's not a big upset. I disagree with that. Mayo over Hüsler. I mean, Hüsler has been, so disappointing. Reis da Silva over Ugo Carabelli. I didn't understand these odds, I remember, because, well, Reis da Silva on a good day can beat anyone. Luz again beating Monteiro. That was kind of surprising, maybe, that he's done again. Oh, but actually this one, yeah. I should mention these two in Florianopolis. And in fact, it's going to be this match that I'm going to choose already. I know there were two crazy upsets in Florianopolis, or actually one near upset. Two 23-year-old Brazilians debuting on the Challenger Tour. One of them, Pablo Saraiva dos Santos. The other, Mateo Barreiros Reyes. Both of them somehow were able to really push some much higher ranked opposition. So Barreiros Reyes actually beat Comesaña 6-4, 6-3. Mostly errors from Fran, but Barreiros Reyes also with his lefty game was able to bother him quite a lot. Whereas Saraiva dos Santos maybe would have been even bigger for me, because he was playing some insane tennis against Blancano. Really blasting his forehand, hitting through the court, very Yamas Ruiz-like forehand swing, if that makes sense. But eventually, Saraiva dos Santos, in like 3 hours and 20-something minutes, he wasn't able to get the job done. So it was only Barreiros Reyes who did that. and I think he deserves the call up here for the upset of the week. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to find anything really in the other events that would be able to match it. The odds that I'm seeing here on it right now were like 10 to 1, so yeah, pretty crazy. Jacopo Berrettini over Chonsin Tseng, yeah, that's actually a solid one as well. Or Justin over De Jong, which I already mentioned in the Barcelona section. But yeah, all in all, my vote has to go to Mateo Barreiros Reyes beating Francisco Comesaña. So with the reviews done and the match and upset of the week section done, we can just move on to the previews now. We've got five challengers next week. First time in a while, I think, that we have five. But of course, this is going to be a pretty regular occurrence later on in the year. So let's just get down to business. We have 1-1-25 in Busan. We start the Asian swing, in South Korea, of course. We also have 100, which is in Madrid. And then there's also three Challenger 75s, split, and two that sort of, one is a continuation of the altitude Mexican swing in Morelos, but we're transferring to hard courts now after Mexico City. And we also have Sarasota, which is, of course, kicking off the US green clay swing. So when it comes to Busan, which is where we're going to start, we have the Challenger 125. And I was surprised to learn that actually Max Purcell eventually didn't decide to look for points here. Aleksandar Vukic is the defending champ, but he chose to play other events, understandably. I think he's already lost in Monte Carlo qualifying, though. Understandably, I mean, given his ranking. I thought Purcell might actually try to save some points here. But anyway, we've got James Duckworth as the top seed playing this Korean wildcard, Ho Young Ro, whom I think I'm seeing for the first time. There's also Arthur Ferry back, finally, hopefully this time healthy. He's going to play Jules Marie. That could be an amazing second round matchup, Duckworth Ferry. We've got Marchenko against Bolt as well. Bu Yuncha Okete is the fifth seed playing a qualifier. Of course, Bu was a very good figure in that Asian South Korean swing last year, winning a title. There's also third seed Shoshima Bukuro playing Yasutaka Uchiyama. One of them will face Dane Sweeney or a qualifier. We've got this Taiwanese matchup of Su. This is quite interesting too. Yu Siu Su and Tung Lin Wu. And one of them can play Li Tu or a qualifier. We also have Lloyd Harris against Ricardas Berankis, kind of a vintage matchup, if you may. Also, Filip Sekulic against Jisung Nam. Would love a big run from Sekulic, but yeah, we'll see if he's ready, if he's like more controlled already than at the Australian Open. There's Alibek Kakhmazov too, playing a qualifier. I think he's once again had very solid ITF results recently. This is a fantastic round one. Sunwoo Kwon against Mattia Bellucci. Let's see what Kwon can bring to the table and what is this weird season for him, right? Which at the end of it, he'll be drafted into the military, which is the same like Sung Chan Hong, who is coming later in the draw. Coleman Wong against Alexander Bloks, that's just an incredible matchup. I was actually about to check, can I watch it tomorrow? Because it might be while I'm flying, but if not, I will definitely see it. No, it's not tomorrow. Okay, someone lied to me. That's good for me that it's not tomorrow, because if it was tomorrow, I'd probably miss it. However, no, it's not tomorrow, so that's fantastic. On Tuesday, I will surely be able to watch it, which it might be the match of the week, who knows. There's Antoine Escoffier as well playing a qualifier, Marc Layal playing a qualifier. Hopefully it's going to be a good part of the season for Layal, because so far this year, I mean, he's kind of wasted 3 months. Partially his fault, partially not. And then Seong Chan Hong plays Otto Virtanen. So I think we might have mentioned that earlier on one of the episodes when Virtanen was winning all these points in the indoor swing, but Otto Virtanen did sort of choose right that he's going to Asia instead of trying to play on clay in Europe. I don't know how he's going to do. It's still outdoors. You still don't expect him to be like maybe, you know, a huge, massive threat like he was in the indoor season in March. But if he's going to make a top 100 push, it kind of starts here. Seong Chan Hong, not a perfect draw, I have to say. And that whole quarter, I mean, Layal in the second round, Wong or Blocks in the quarters. This is kind of a nightmare for Virtanen and Busan. But of course, the potential reward, if he was able to do it in a Challenger 1-5, is huge. What do we have in the qualies? Some very interesting players for sure. Charik Bilek, we've got Paul Jubb. Today he was really struggling against Jia Moon Lee. won in the third set tiebreak. There's also Haliak, who in this part of the world, I guess, had a final last year. Ryo Noguchi against James McCabe. Pretty interesting final qualities round, I think, if anyone wants to watch. Obviously, by the time you're listening to this, that, especially since it's in Busan, that match will already be gone. But who knows, if I'm struggling to fall asleep tonight, maybe I'll watch it. But yeah, I mean, no one really that could win this event, I think. So let's just think of who we want to pick as like the main contender to take this title. Honestly, given the form of Artur Ferri, not the form, but the fitness of Artur Ferri recently, I really want to go James Duckworth, I think. Why? In the second quarter, I feel like it's very open. So you've got Shimabukuro, Uchiyama, Sweeney, Su Wu, and Tu. Yeah, tough to pick from that. I don't know if I have enough trust in Bellucci right now to really pick him from the third one. And as I said, that fourth quarter is just incredible. Wong, Blocks, Layal, Virtanen, Hong, Escoffier even. I mean, Layal, Virtanen, Wong, Blocks. This is just a list of insane prospects. I think all of these guys will be in the top 100 at some point. Probably, I don't know if at the same time, but at some point of their careers. This is just talent, 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 talent. And rough. I mean, I don't want to pick anyone from that quarter because I have no idea who's going to be winning it. So I think James Duckworth is like the safe pick here. Of course, the top seeds are always the safe pick, kind of. But yeah, I mean, if Ferri isn't that dangerous at the moment, then I really like Duckworth's chances to go deep. Obviously, he's been very solid form this year. In fact, probably you can even take it like October, right? Recently, he's been playing some ATP Tour events as well and getting results. I mean, quarterfinal in Dallas, quarterfinal in Brisbane, one round in Houston, almost beat Tiafoe, who's currently playing, well, while I'm speaking, actually, he's playing in the final in Houston. I think he's losing right now. Yeah, he's down a set. But anyway, yeah, Duckworth almost beat him in Houston. I mean, this already points to me that if Duckworth doesn't lose to Ferri, I think he's got a fantastic shot at making the final. I don't know if he would win the final. I think everyone from like that group of Bellucci, Wong, Blocks, Layal, Virtanen, all of these young talented guys could beat him. But I think he's got a great chance of making it there. So yeah, I'm just going to go with James Duckworth. And then, as I said, the other bigger challenger than 75 is the challenger 100 in Madrid. We've got Alexander Shevchenko there as the defending champion, but of course he's not playing. In fact, I think he also lost in Monte Carlo qualifying already. And Pedro Cachin also, I'm surprised that he withdrew because that seemed like the perfect opportunity to break that losing streak that he has. But maybe there's something physical around it, right? I guess that's the only explanation, really, because otherwise, why would he be withdrawing from an event that's such a massive opportunity for him? But, well, whatever, it's his choice. Madrid is that challenger where, of course, just like in the actual Madrid ATP 1000, we get about 600-700 meters altitude. This is why this would be a fantastic chance for Cachin, by the way. And conditions like this, we're going to have to factor this in. Now, when it comes to the first round, top seed Taro Daniel plays Giulio Zeppieri. That is massive. I don't know what sort of form Zeppieri will come in because he was recently injured, right? But, I mean, it's still Taro Daniel against Giulio Zeppieri in the first round of a challenger. Super exciting. Second round, one of them can play Benjamin Hassan or a qualifier. And there's also Yuri Rodionov against Yevseyev and Zapata Miralles against the qualifier. This is a fantastic section. And this draw as a whole is actually just insane. Camilo Carabelli flying over very quickly from Florianopolis where he had that lower back pain. He plays Vitaly Sachko here. No clue how he's going to do given, you know, it's really a short turnaround for him. We've got Leandro Ridi as well playing a qualifier. Clay, okay, maybe not his best surface, but in these conditions, I don't know, he could be very dangerous. João Fonseca plays a qualifier. Obviously, I don't really think that Fonseca in a draw of this quality would be winning the title, but he can always win a match, two matches, three matches, if he just has a good day at the office, right? And then we also have Yoris Delor playing against Aron Maillot. Bottom half, another great matchup, Vít Kopřiva against Martin Landaluce. Kopřiva still has like 3-4 months of not defending many points, but he needs to actually start gaining them in order to get to the top 100 soon. And getting Landalusa in the first round in quicker conditions, I don't know if I like it. Although Kopřiva is actually really good in quicker clay conditions too. And then you have Vilius Gaubas against Stefano Napolitano. Lovely that Gaubas gets more chances at the challenger level. You've got Hugo Grenier against the qualifier. Grenier, by the way, very good run in Madrid last year, the ATP 1000, so he could be dangerous here too. And Alejandro Morocanias plays Yuncheng Shang, another one of these very talented youngsters that, yeah, we're just excited to see how he will perform in conditions like this. And then the bottom quarter, we've got Mikhail Kukushkin against Nicolas Moreno de Alboran. Moreno de Alboran just was in the quarterfinals of an ATP Tour event in Marrakesh, losing to Carbaez Baena, if I remember correctly. Winner of, what was the title? Oh, Barcelona. Nick Hart plays Rudolf Moleker. Hart with a special exempt here. And there's also Roca Bataia against Per. And Ramos Vinolas picks up a wild card, but of course is the second seed starting against the qualifier. Already I can tell you that I have no idea yet who I am going to picking, who I'm going to be picking here. When it comes to the qualifying, we've got Passaro against Andreozzi. What a great match. I mean, I know Andreozzi recently isn't really playing singles anymore again, but I still believe that he has the level to, like, you know, on his day, beat a lot of players at the Challenger Tour. Schelbach against Barranco Cossano, great final round matchup. Hüsler against Brancaccio, love it. Ignacio Buse, also here. Taberner is going to play Merida Aguilar. Fantastic final qualies round, by the way. If I was able to, like, teleport myself to one challenger tomorrow, it would be Madrid. I'm actually pretty close from Madrid, right? I mean, I'm in Portugal, but I already have my flight spot to back to Poland, of course. Could be an idea for next year if Estoril stays on the calendar, but we'll see. Anyway, yeah, so from the qualifying, a lot of good players, but probably no one who will win, I would assume. And I really have no idea who I want to pick here, because Taro Daniel in these conditions, he could be good, but he plays Zepieri and then Hassan. I mean, this is rough. Ugo Carabelli, as I said, I don't think he's that much of a threat, actually. I mean, he could be, but winning 5 matches in these conditions, I don't know if I like his chances. I was thinking of Yuncheng Shang. I think this is a little bullish, like it's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, we haven't really seen him pull this off in conditions like this, on clay court, at the top challenger level. I mean, in fact, he's not really played much on clay court the last couple of seasons. Withdrew from events last week too. But, you know, the more I think about it, I'm going to try, I think. Obviously, last year he qualified for the French Open. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try. I'm going to try Yuncheng Shang. I have zero confidence in this pick. But wherever I go here, I would have zero confidence, I think. Ramos Vinolas has a very nice section, but I just don't know if I trust his ability to take it at this stage. Shang, yeah, again, he's got a pretty tough one. I mean, Morocanias round one, that's not easy. Morocanias was also really good in this Madrid ATP 1000. You've got Grenier, you've got Kopřiva in that one, you've got Landalusa even. I mean, yeah, it's just super tough to pick a winner from this event. I'm gonna try Yuncheng Shang, but I know it's like a bit of a ballsy, you know, let's see if you can show your potential at that stage already, because we haven't really seen that yet from him in these sort of circumstances. But I'm gonna try, because why not? I mean, this is just a game. And I'm just gonna go with potential, basically. I think that if Shank plays well, he has the variety, he has the clay court skills to beat all the players in this draw. Well, of course, not against everyone it would be easy, but I think he might have the beating of a lot of players here. If he's healthy, if he's ready to play. Let's see. It's a bit of a guess. But as I said, this is just a very tough event to pick from. And then for the three Challenger 75s left, I think we're going to start with Split, just finish off Europe and then go to the Americas again. So in Split, obviously, Zsombor Piros is the defending champion. He is the top seed here as well. We've been talking about his potential top 100 push, and by now I think we should say it's not happening. I mean, he would have to defend both Split and Oeiras for his chances to, like, remain pretty much the same. Presently, he is 114th in the rankings. He loses even one of these titles, Split Oreiras, and he's in big trouble. So, well, in big trouble. He's not going to break the top 100. So, yeah, I mean, I don't like Pirosh's chances to really win back-to-back again. But again, you know, last year he was in such good form. I mean, six challenger quarterfinals in a row. These two back-to-back titles kind of ended the whole thing. I don't know. It's just right now, of course, he hasn't really pushed on. He hasn't really capitalized on his opportunity, I think, especially in Tenerife. But anyway, he plays Nerman Fatic here, which is a pretty tough round one. I mean, I know Fatic maybe is more so a CBU specialist than Split specialist, but, you know, it should be similar conditions, should be similar courts. Then you have Skatov against Neumayer, Michael Hertz plays a qualifier, and then Billy Harris or Filip Misolic. Misolic recently kind of on and off injured as well, it seems. Lukas Klein is the third seed, playing a qualifier, and then Veseli or Lamazin. Kaśniakowski Kolasz, interesting round one. And also Matej Dodik. I'm so excited that we're going to get Matej Dodik again, and he's playing Alex Molchan too, which I honestly don't know who's the favorite right now between Matej Dodik and Alex Molchan. Let me see if that match is on Monday, and hopefully not. Indeed, it's not. So great, because again, I will probably have a chance to watch it. And yeah, then later on in the bottom half, we've got Juan Manuel Cerundolo against Stefano Trevaglia, couple of qualifiers. Nicolas David Yonel against Josef Kovalik, and Quentin Olis plays Ivan Gakov. Not easy right away, although Gakov has been struggling too. Luka Mikrut, another wild card, he plays Ivan Gakov. Ivan Gakov was higher up. Damir Dżumhur, the Barletta champion. Henry Squire plays a qualifier, and Santiago Rodriguez Taverna faces Benjamin Bonzi. And the second seed with a wild card is Duje Ajdukovic. He's going to play a qualifier. It's not easy. I mean, when it comes to the qualies, we've got Krutik facing Topo, Forejtek is also there, of course, recently a great run in Zadar, Felix Gil against Strombachs, Erhardt against Nicot. I'm interested to see how Nicot does. Recently won a big, very stacked 25k, Mili Policzak, the Wimbledon junior champion, Elmer Müller as well, he won Santa Margherita di Pula last week, in dominant fashion, I would say. He plays Dan Aded. That was in Estoril, actually, but I think he only played doubles. But anyway, probably not looking at the qualifiers in terms of the potential winners. I think, to me, here the main question is, do we trust Lukas Klein? I think we kind of have no choice. Potentially, he could be one of the best players in the draw, like here, just straight up. And I think potentially he could just win this title. Matej Dodik is a problem in the quarters. I'd actually kind of like Matej Dodik's chances. But if Klein can just keep himself steady, avoid one of the toughest qualifiers, I kind of like his chances to go deep. In Estoril, I actually watched his match in the final qualies round, and he lost to Jaime Faria. Pretty rough that was. But I think the conditions after a lot of rain were very heavy, damp, and that did not go right with his game and his movement as well. It was a very rough watch, dude. I mean, Klein that day was just, yeah, better to forget about this performance. And I'm just going to sort of choose to think that this is just a one-off. And that's why I'm going to pick Lukas Klein to win Split. Otherwise, Ajdukovic, I think, is a serious contender given his draw. He's been like a little more consistent recently. Pirosh, I don't really treat as a serious contender to defend his title because he has Fatic in the first round. I think that's already tough. Skatov round two. Like, of course, he can do it, but it's going to be tough with the sort of draw that he has. So, yeah, my pick here is going to be Lukas Klein. I think pretty normal. I think a lot of people here would go for Klein, unless they maybe get scared of how he looked last week, which admittedly, yeah, the match that I saw, because I didn't see his first round of qualifying, but that second match against Faria was a nightmare. That was, I arrived in Estoril on Sunday, and the tennis that we watched on Sunday was just abysmal, honestly. I mean, it happens, right? Then, of course, later in the week, we got a few pretty insane matches. Martinez Rud, especially. Monfils Fucsovics. So, of course, it was like made up for, but I think the conditions made it very tough for the players to actually, you know, compete at their very best on that first day. And as I mentioned, we also have two more challengers, Challenger 75s in Morelos and Sarasota. Sarasota is a lot more interesting, I have to say, to me. So let's just start with Morelos, just to be fun. Like, that's just to be, you know, sort of quirky about it, let's say that. And Morelos is, of course, a continuation of the Challenger altitude swing in Mexico. When it comes to Morelos, it's a hardcore event, but still the altitude does make a big deal of difference. Obviously, this is the one that famously was won by Matias Franco de Scotte, for example. And 1,400 meters altitude, by the way. Thiago Agustin Tiranta is the defending champion. He is here as the second seed, of course, just had a fantastic run in Mexico City. But the top seed is actually Rinki Hijikata, who tries this event pretty interestingly. He is going to face Alexis Galarno, though. So when it comes to the finalists of Mexico City, we've got one as the second seed here, and the other is playing the first seed. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to be in, let's say, in for some quick action. Then we've got Skander Mansouri as well playing a qualifier, also a good Mexico City performer, of course. Oliveira against Fikovic. Fikovic always good on altitude, and especially maybe in on altitude hard. Leon last year, for example. And Maxim Cressy here too, against Sebastian Fanslow. I have no clue how Cressy is going to look on these courts, but I'm very interested to check it out. That's for sure. Zachary Svajda, the third seed. It seems like it's a horrible choice for him, but who knows? I mean, we'll see. He's kind of probably aiming at some cheap points. We'll see if he can get them. Dominik Palan plays Nick Chappell. Tristan Skulkate against the qualifier. And Vasek Pospisil with a wild card. He plays Hies Brouwer. So that's a pretty interesting round one too. We've got Zhukaev against Lok. Langmo against the qualifier. Bellier against the qualifier. Seven Voliers, always really good in these conditions, it seems. Maybe especially lefties. Although Bellier is a bit more of a... Well, actually, I mean, he can play on both clay and hard, obviously. Then Adam Walton is the fourth seed playing a qualifier. We've got a pretty nice matchup here between Becci Pericard and wildcard Escobedo. Jasica against Mayo. Janvier, the one of the best performers again of the Mexico City Challenger. He plays McHugh. And then Pacheco Mendes or Tirante. Pacheco Mendes with a very tough draw facing Tirante in the first round. So, I mean, this is going to be rough in order to pick a title winner from. When it comes to the qualifying, I don't think the first round has been finished yet while I'm recording this. So let me see who's already through. We've got, out of interesting players, let's say Mena, for example, always good on altitude. We've got Ilagan. He had a nice run somewhere. Indian Wells, was it, earlier this year? We've got Matias Soto. One of the recent breakthroughs of, what was that event? San Luis Potosi, right? Mejia, the guy who played him in that final. There's an interesting round one at the qualifying level. Round one of the qualifying coming up with Segerman and Sel. I'm very keen to see who gets that. No pun intended. Just one person might understand why I said that. No pun intended, but who knows. If they even will. But anyway, when it comes to Morelos qualifying, I guess that's kind of it. Like, there's nothing, you know, exceptional, but I think there are a fair few players who in these conditions could be dangerous. Yeah, Soto, Mena, Mejia, obviously so much experience in playing in conditions like this. Ayeni, Ilagan, Ayupovic as well. He's had some very good runs in Mexico, especially last year. Yeah, it's kind of open. And when it comes to the winner pick, I don't want to go Hijikata. I don't know. Something just tells me he's not going to do it. He's like coming here as a bit of a, you know, only favorite, only guy who can win it. And I don't know. I mean, he's playing Galarno already in round one. That's tough. I have absolutely zero clue how Maxim Cressy will perform. Has he ever played an event like this even? I mean, it's just either a very weird scheduling choice or actually the best he could have gotten. And I legit can't tell you why. I legit can't tell you which. I don't think he's ever played this Mexico altitude hardcore swing. I'm just trying to check that very quickly. And in fact, I can't see it. On clay courts, has he ever played a Mexico altitude event? I'm just checking that and I don't see it as well. So again, I have absolutely zero clue how he's gonna fare. Can I actually pick Maxim Cressy here is my question. I mean, obviously I can, you know, physically, yes, I can. But is it going to be a smart choice when he's playing Fikovic in the second round? No. I'm shying away from this. You know who I'm going to try? Let's go baby Zhukaev. He was pretty good in Mexico City and he's actually a horrible mover on clay, right? So I think if we get him to hard courts and also give him altitude conditions, I like his chances. I know Ben Locke isn't the easiest round one, but I don't have a pick here that I'm like, yeah, this guy will win. Tirante, sure, I mean, but after Mexico City, I mean, he's gonna play here Janvier, maybe second round, quarters, Mpechi Pericard. Yeah, let's just shy away from Tirante but for now. Let's go Babit Dzhukaev. Pretty crazy pick, maybe, but, you know, he got one last year, right? And it wasn't even altitude. And, yeah, just considering his performance in Mexico City, I think it's possible. And then the last challenger that we have to preview is the Sarasota Open, the first green clay event. Daniel Altmaier, the defending champion, but he's not defending it. In fact, I think he was in Monte Carlo qualies as well, losing to someone today, Mute maybe. And yeah, when it comes to green clay, I think by now you guys all probably know what it is about. I mean, it's a synthetic version of clay, essentially, which all it really means is that it's going to be like a more normal bounce, more predictable, different type of footwork even than on regular red clay. Pretty much what we have at that Houston event, even though their green clay is actually colored red. You know, more aggressive players, more natural hard courters have a shot. When it comes to the top seed here, that's JJ Wolf playing Dmitry Popko. So, you know, that's a spicy round one matchup. I'm really excited to watch it. Tennis Sandgren against Tyson Kwiatkowski, Clément Tabour against Ethan Quinn. We've got Denis Kudla as well against the qualifier. Zizou Berks was really good in the green clay swing last year. He plays Oliver Crawford. Then there's a couple of qualifiers. Toby Kodat against Martin Dam. And Mitchell Kruger against Patrick Kipson. So a lot of Americans, obviously. And then the bottom half, we've got Gabriel Diallo against the qualifier. Schwarzler, the Austrian junior, Joel Joseph Schwarzler, he plays Tristan Boyer. Interesting interesting event to use your challenger junior accelerator on for the Austrian 17-year-old. Is he still 17 or is he 18 by now? I think he might be 18 by now. Yeah, he's 18 by now. Boyer is a tough draw. Obviously, Boyer last year, he had his breakthrough in these very events. Maybe not in Sarasota, but in the next two. Alexander Richard plays a qualifier, and this is insane. Yibing Wu against Thanasi Kokkinakis. Boom, right? I mean, that's all you can say. Boom. And what a match. What a match in the first round already. I have absolutely no clue who's the favorite. I'm actually going to check who's the favorite for the bookies because I'm very interested. I would say Thanasi maybe slightly, just because Yibing is just coming back, but I don't know if that's actually right. Me personally, actually it's not slight. They're giving a pretty big edge to Thanasi. I would say it should be closer. I think Yibing was good enough in Houston to warrant it. But yeah, I mean, Thanasi is pretty good on like green clay and clay in general, actually. People don't rate him highly enough, I think. But yeah, this is just insane. I mean, Yibing Wu, Thanasi Kokkinakis. What a match in the opening round of Sarasota. And then Michael Moe plays Jeffrey Blancano. Mark Polmans against the qualifier. Alessandro Giannessi against Calvin Emery. And Bruno Kuzuhara will take on Juan Pablo Varillas. Wow. It's going to be a very exciting event. I can already tell you I'm going to be watching a lot of it. When it comes to the qualifying, again, I don't think we've had many matches finished yet when I'm recording this. Well, actually, a lot of matches in the first round have finished, but not every one of them. Stefan Kozlov beat Artur Geada was an interesting one. Durasovic beat Rybakov as well. Campania Lee, Pekotic. Gerald Meltzer against Kyle Edmund. What a throwback, right? I don't know if they've actually ever played a few years ago, but just in terms of like the vintage names trying to come back from injuries, right? They did play actually 2013 in an American Challenger in Orange Park and also at the French Open in qualifying in 2015. So it is actually a throwback match. I was not lying with that. And I mean, I don't think either of these guys is going to win the title, but I'm interested to see how they do for sure. And when it comes to who actually I think will win the title, I believe my pick is going to be Zizou Berks. Let me tell you why. I like his draw for the first two rounds. Then in the quarters, he could play Dam or Kipson. That's pretty tough. In fact, I believe Zizou played Dam last year at this very swing. And let me see if he lost to him or if it was just really tough. It was just really tough. Okay, it was in Savannah and it was really tough. But he was coming off a title in Tallahassee and he was pretty tired. But anyway, he also played Gibson just recently in Houston, just last week. And he managed to beat him. So that's kind of a good prognosis in terms of if he plays Gibson in the quarters. And I think he might. Obviously, Dam, Gibson, you know, they could both reach it. But yeah, that's probably one of his... Like, one of them will probably be his quarterfinal opponent if he indeed makes it through the first two rounds. So if he gets through that, I then think he's pretty much, you know, even with anyone who's going to be left in the draw. One of Kokkinakis, I can see them being very dangerous. Tristan Boyer, maybe. Who knows? And otherwise, Varillas on green clay, that's going to be very interesting. His draw seems to be kind of suitable. Then again, Calvin Emery, last year he had a nice run in one of these events, Savannah maybe. So I don't know. Michael Moe as well, he was good in Houston. He could be a threat, but that's all bottom half. And that top half here, I don't think it carries that much of a threat. I mean, Popko could be very good on green clay. I think at the ITF level he's been, but challengers maybe not so much. And Wolf, I would kind of assume that, yeah, he can win a few matches, but probably won't win a title on green clay. That's kind of where I stand with JJ, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I think for me, Zizou Berks makes a lot of sense here as a pick. Obviously, he won a title last year on this very surface, in this very swing. I don't think it was this one, but still, I do think he's got a very good chance and a very good draw. And with that, we can finish off the episode. We've been talking for over an hour, I think, 5 events to preview this time. So next time, of course, when we meet, I'm going to have a lot of recapping to do, but well... I'm definitely going to handle it, and this time I'm also going to have a lot more time, presumably, to watch the Challenger Circuit than this week when I was in Estoril. So I'll see you guys then. I'll be talking to you from Poland already, and I'm going to be recapping and reviewing Busan, Madrid, Split, Sarasota, and Morelos. Wow, this went very, very smoothly. Once again, thank you all for listening, and I'll see you guys in 7 days. About 7 days. Bye.